and welcome to Condensed History Gems with me, Greg Chapman.
And me, Jem Deducci.
And it's one of those real special treat episodes today. Jem, I believe you've sorted out another special guest for us here.
I have indeed. We searched the internet, and this is one where it's actually taken a very long time to get it sorted out, because we got Neil, who is the ancient blogger or ancient history gent. He's called several different things in the World Wide Web, and it's taken us a while to sort this out, but actually we've been communicating off and on for quite a while. Isn't that right, Neil?
Yeah, that's absolutely correct, and thanks for having me on. We have been. I think you were one of the earliest people I got chatting to on Twitter, and all about various types of things, I suppose.
Yeah, isn't it weird that, you know, this is the sort of first generation where people with a love of a particular thing, we just start finding each other on social media, as opposed to sort of 20 years ago, where it would have to be far more difficult to A, spread our love of the thing, and B, actually get in contact with each other. So how do you find, let's start things off with, how did you get into all of this then?
Right, well, I suppose, like many a person, I stumbled out of university with a degree in ancient history. And I compounded that with a master's in classical civ, and then realised that there's no industry for history, really. And yep. So I ended up working in an office and sort of wondering exactly what I'd done and where it was all coming to. I was quite fortunate, though. I got into reenactment. I did some reenactment here, there and everywhere, and that gave me, a love for engaging with people about ancient history. And it was about 5 years ago I started my blog, which was on Tumblr originally, and then Twitter followed, and then I started doing vlogs and committing myself to YouTube, which I still apologize for, and now I'm starting to do podcasts, which I suppose really should have been one of the earliest things I started to do, but it's, you know, it's fallen where it has. And, you know, I'm sort of slowly falling down the stairs of ancient history with a smile on my face, I suppose. It's probably the best way of putting it.
What a lovely way of putting it. I think all three of us can agree that, yes, sort of writing the blogs and putting up the social media, that's relatively straightforward. But as soon as you get to YouTube and you get to vlogging or little sort of 5-minute documentaries and stuff like that, that's an awful lot of work for like 300 hits kind of thing.
Yeah.
I'm going to kind of disagree slightly with you because I find it quite easy where I do my sort of messaging road and where I do video editing sort of profession. I find knocking together videos, little videos, and, you know, doing these podcasts, to be honest, the easiest thing. And I'm going to give you a little bit of advice, Neil. Now, it's great to set up and do a podcast. What you actually want to do is find someone to podcast with that's going to do all the hard work. I'm not sure exactly which one of us that applies to, because I always think Jem has to do all the hard work because he ends up doing all the complicated research stuff and I just kind of wing it as we go along. On the flip side, I have to do all the editing of the sound afterwards and try and put the whole thing together. So,
I think, to be fair, it works well for the two of us because we secretly think the other one's doing more work. So if that works well. Anyway, we're taking over from Neil. So, Neil, what first caught my eye with your social media presence were the cool photos of you in full legionary armor. And you've already mentioned the reenactment. So how did you get into that? And how much did it cost?
Oh, I'll get to the cost in a bit. First of all, I started, I think it was back in 2001. And it was with Ermine Street Guard, who you may have heard of. They're quite well regarded. They're a really, really good bunch. And I sort of contacted them and said, I've done history, I'm interested in coming out and, you know, doing whatever needs to be done. And I wouldn't say I thought I was an expert, because I wasn't. These guys know their stuff back to front. I mean, they can tell you by, you know, a belt loop or something, what decade that piece of kit belonged to. They're real, real experts. And we ended up going to Boulogne. And that was really good fun. We marched around a lot. Hobnail boots and cobblestones do not make good bedfellows. My feet were just horrific afterwards. We set up outside the walls. They'd found some Roman walls, so they wanted to bring a a bunch of Romans over from Britain, as you do, and we got to fire melons and various other things through ballistae and this sort of small piece artillery, and then we got to stand around whilst the officials walked around the walls, and then afterwards we got invited up to a big sort of meal, I suppose you'd call it, and we're all in kit, and it just felt like something out of Monty Python, but it was really good fun. Yeah, it was everything. You got to march around. I was an auxiliar, so I got to wear, well, chainmail effectively, and that's not easy to wear because in the cold it takes the heat away from you. It's really, really weird. In the heat it cooks you, and in the cold it takes the heat away from you.
And that so was you're my pretty first much guaranteed to be miserable at all times. Where
yeah, it wasn't. It was by no means ergonomic.
How interesting. I never knew that. So all right, so shall we come on to cost then?
Oh, yeah. Well, after that, I did some more. I did some filming. And that's the one photo I've got sometimes. I feel a bit guilty because I'm wearing a bearskin. And the bearskin, I didn't know until afterwards it was real. And I felt, being a lover of animals, I did feel a bit bad about that. We were doing some filming and this is for Legio 2 Augusta, who are based in Portsmouth. It's a bit close to where I live. And we were doing, I was going to be, and I was in fact, on the screen. I've never been able to find the footage, which is a bit annoying, being killed by an awful German. I was one of the first, it was all about the Teutonburg massacre under Varro and sort of. So it was deeply, deeply unpleasant, beastly for the Romans. And I got killed and we spent a whole day filming. So I did that, and I've done some museum work as well, which is really good fun. And that's very different. You stand around and people come up and ask you all sorts of questions. And it can be quite poignant at times. I've had people with babies come up, and babies either love or hate people in armour because of the crests and the shiny stuff. And there's a section in the Iliad where I think it's Hector's son is really spooked by the fact that Hector has got a shining armour and he's got a helmet on. And this, I put the helmet on and this baby completely freaked. So I felt really bad about that, but I've done all sorts of things, and then I ended up being able to afford, saved up and bought my own armour, and that was, I think it cost close to about £800 in total, and it was all handmade from armamentaria.com, and they're based up in Ipswich, and it's beautiful. It takes a lot of upkeep. You can't get any sort of damp near it because it will rust in seconds. And that was my sort of lead in. That's where the sort of vlogging came in, because I had something of interest and note. And now I've done all the vlogs I can on my armour, I'm kind of left a bit stuck. I'm not sure what to do now.
Yeah.
Well, this is something we kind of discussed a bit when we had Nuko Raven on the podcast. He's actually a Viking reenactor. We had him on a few months ago now. And he was saying that when it comes to Viking reenacting, you can sort of build up slowly, as it were. You can, you can sort of start moving in and you slowly move up to warrior status. Whereas presumably it's a little bit different when you're dealing with a Roman soldier, because obviously Roman soldiers, they weren't a cobbled together band of warriors. They were a strict army. Presumably you have to go out and say, right, you can't go out and buy, the shoes one week and then a toga the next, or a tunic the next week or whatever. You have to go out and appear fully armoured up. Is that right?
Yeah, that was. And there is, you do get a general sense of hierarchy there. You will, when you first go in, you are a grunt and you will be auxiliar or you'll be basic legionary, and that's it. You get told how to march and you get taught the basics. I've heard that I got chatting to quite a few reenactment people, and sometimes they do these events where you have all sorts of reenactors from different ages, and apparently everyone kind of falls into the culture they are, or the period they're reenacting. So apparently the Vikings are the worst behaved. they're kind of the, oh no, it's a rugby tour and they're on steroids. All good fun, but they are, yeah. The other thing as well, when it comes to reenactment, I had a friend who did the lots of the Wars of the Roses period, and he used to retell me with awful stories of bits getting chopped off, and you have to almost learn very good first aid whenever you deal with that. But you can choreograph battles when you have those kind of reenactments. You can't do that with Roman. It doesn't work. You can't have a Roman going after, a bunch of Gauls, because there isn't really a fight to choreograph, because it was I think the best description I've ever heard is of a Roman legion is they're a meat grinder. You know, they come up close and they just keep stabbing at you. The only time I've ever done anything where I almost got injured is when we did some. It was in Boulogne, and we got given some spears and some shields. And obviously, being auxiliary, I was quite chuffed. I thought, okay, I can do this. And I was up against this guy who was twice my age and about 15 times my weight. And so I thought, okay, we had really heavy rubber balls in the end of our spears. And I said, okay. So I even did, and this is hubristic, beyond hubristic. I tried to do an Ali shuffle. And the crowd sort of laughed. And then the next thing I know, there was this thing coming over the top of my shield and just took me straight out, gave me a black eye. And I learned my lesson very quickly. So you do, I suppose, with the reenactment, each period has its own challenges and its own opportunities. And obviously with the Roman one, there is a lot of cost. If you're going to go out and get a new bit, I still don't have any Caligulae. I don't have any shoes. And that's really quite difficult to get hold of, because the ones you want to buy, they're expensive and you want to make them fit properly, and they carve your feet up like something else.
It's shoes that I find are always a problem with any sort of historical sort of clothing and outfit. I know it's a thing that I have an absolute nightmare with, because we all know full well that the Romans had shoes that they could march a long, long way in and didn't fall apart. And yet I find the majority of sort of reenacting supplies, a lot of them, the shoes they kind of actually provide a lot of the time are almost theatrical shoes. They're not designed for quite the hard wearing.
You get a lot of that. There's a lot of kit that you can get now, and you have to be very careful, because the sort of kit that you could end up buying isn't anywhere near authentic. It's almost film stuff. The sort of thing that it's light to wear, it's easy to wear. It's not the stuff that would have been worn. It's not designed the right way. It's anachronistic in many senses. And okay, you know, I'm speaking in English. I'm not speaking in Latin. We do have, I've done some reenactment with particularly museums. I think very approachable, and I'll talk about what the kit is and how it would have worked and how it had been used. But then you always have, and I won't judge them for this, the "I am Maximus" and "what is this?" And can I take a photo with you on my phone? What is a phone? In Rome we have tablets, and it's and you sat there and you go, don't know about that. So you do get a sort of sliding scale of people who really want to commit. And they can kind of out geek each other, which is quite amusing at times.
Well, it's kind of
go on,
Greg. After you, Jim.
Well, I was going to say, what you stumbled across there, Neil, is we had a sort of conversation about this before we had the Viking reenactor on, and you've sort of raised it again. My point is that reenactment is that strange thing that sits between history and entertainment. Yeah, and you're quite right. Nobody's actually going to learn the entire Latin language, whereas that is more authentic. There are limitations to the authenticity of all this stuff, but there are clearly some eras that are easier to reenact, and also there are there are some bands that take it more seriously than others. The issue I have is when you get these sort of overweight middle-aged guys or pretending to be SS soldiers, and it's like they were not that like that. And secondly, your arm is expensive, but a Panzer Mark III is even more expensive. And it's like, you're seeing three guys as the Wehrmacht, and that's not what the Wehrmacht were. I appreciate there are limitations to all this stuff, but I'm just curious, you obviously take it seriously. You have a degree and master's in ancient history. So where do you sit on this? How much should be populist and entertainment, but where do you draw the line where it's like, no, we have to stick to the history kind of thing?
It's difficult because obviously, you've got both ends. You've got one end, people just won't be interested. And the other end is you're selling them a false picture. Mm-hmm. I try to stay in the middle. The thing is, ultimately, I'm no entertainer, and I'm certainly not someone who can act in any level or sense of the word. So for me, it's far easier. I find it, I'd come over and talk to me, do you want to learn about this and that and the other? You talk about the pans of the Wehrmacht and stuff, and it was quite weird, because I was at the London Museum, and I had a Hasidic Jew and his family come over to me And it was really, again, it was Python. It was really awkward because I was stood there and I realized that, you know, culturally, what the Romans had done and everything else that had happened, it was, but he was really interested. And for his point of view, we were, what we were wearing represented a really important part of his cultural history. And it's very sobering when you get those moments. And it's, so you, every time you do this sort of thing, it is very much a two-way process. You learn as much doing it as you do the other people around you, or you hope that's the case.
And I think to talk on Jem's point about the reenactors and the different styles, I think it kind of, for me, it all depends how you present yourself. As you say, there's people who will present themselves as, oh, yeah, I don't know what a mobile phone is, blah, 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 blah. There are people who present themselves as being the be-all and end-all authority. I mean, it's one of my big things is every so often I'll be doing an event, I'll be doing, say, a medieval event, and when I wear my costume for my shows, I kind of go vaguely ahistorical. I'm a juggler, I'm an entertainer, I'm not there to be a reenactor, and I always make that very clear. And I'll have people coming up to me and saying, oh, you know, I'm not sure those trousers, did they really have trousers like that in the medieval times? And I kind of just have to turn around and point at the unicycle next to me, and the glow torches and all of these things around it. And I say, I'm clearly not trying to present myself as a reenactor. I'm clearly not trying to say that I am, you know, I'm just an entertainer. I'm here to juggle. I'm here. I think for my mind, it all depends on how much people are saying, look, I am completely accurate. And the more people try and push that they are 100% accurate, it's the more they really have to back that up.
I think I was actually, obviously, I've done a bit of listening to your fine podcasts, and something
that someone has to.
That's right. Well, yeah, I was that person. And something that Jem said, which really chimed with me, and that was about how you were always interested by the untrodden areas of history and the less obvious. And you said about if you want to go and read a 700-page book on Henry VIII, then you can go and find that, and that's fine. And I think that's where the reenactment thing started that aspect to me. I wasn't ever going to be the most knowledgeable on my subject, but what I could do was offer a sort of signpost to something a bit more interesting. And that's where I went into with my blog. And my blog was written very much with that concept in mind. If you want to read 16,000-mile book on Was Athens Democratic, then be my guest, please go and find it. I'm not going to write those kind of articles. I'm going to do something which is a bit different. And that's what I've tried to do by, but still encompassing the mainstream. And that was the sort of thing that I was trying to do when I was in a sort of reenactor. Because you would get, you know, questions, oh, where did you go to the loo and everything else. But then people would also say, you know, what's that little dagger thing there? And you get your dagger out and or the pugio out and, you know, discuss what it probably was used for. Those are the sorts of things that I find, I say, more important. What I want to do is I don't want people to remember me if they've ever met me, and they probably wouldn't have done, but if they have done, I want them to remember a fact going away or something. It's that little spark, that little bit of interest when they go away and go, oh, right, okay, I didn't know that they had the swords on the right-hand side normally, or so, you know, anything it might be. Those are the things that kind of kickstart an interest somewhere, hopefully do.
Neil, well, first of all, thank you very much for the compliment, much appreciated. But I think one thing that all three of us agree on, but we do it all in different ways, is we want to be the gateway to history. As you've already said, you know, nobody's going to sit down and read a 700-page book as a starting point on any topic. Also, it seems to me that with kids, you know, once they get to that secondary school and they can start opting out of history, very quickly you get history's boring. Well, that's impossible, because history is everything that happened up until yesterday. So yeah, you may not want the Romans or ancient Greeks, but maybe you're really into music, and wouldn't you want to see how music evolved over the 20th century to what you like now? You know, that there is a history of music, there's a history of art. So it isn't all about kings and queens or battles or the ancient Romans. You know, there's always a bit of history that people like. But quite honest, if you're walking around a museum, or if you're, you know, an open air sort of display type thing, then you've got to have a passing interest in this stuff. And that's where you can add extra layers. And you're quite right. No matter where you go, you know, I know a bit about history, but I'm always learning stuff from them. The last one I got was these really weird looking arrows, and it's like, what are they for? I don't get, you know, how they're not even sharp. The back bit has got this sort of weird whisk bit on it almost. And they went, those are fire arrows. That's where you put the wadding in. You know, in the movies, okay, you always see them wrap it around the actual arrow bit. And it's like, that doesn't work. It just falls off. Or, you know, it's like this way you actually get a proper burning arrow. And it's like, great. Okay. I've now seen a bit something that I, you know, just didn't know existed, a specific fire arrow. And, you know, you're talking about, I presume you actually have a gladius. Yes.
Yes. Yes, I do.
Which then leads to the whole conversation about, well, hang on, you're not a gladiator. It's like, well, no, but, you know, and you then have a bigger conversation about Roman civilization. Mm. You sneak that in because you got a cool sword.
Yeah, 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 that's true. When I had a friend, just the one, and she worked as a teaching assistant in a school. I live in Brighton, and she saw that I'd got my Roman kit, and she said, well, could you come in, because we do a Roman week for 8-year-olds. And they're just, so, well, I think year three, so 7 or 8. And I go in, I've been in there 3 times, so I take the day off work, turn up there in Roman kit, and it is what you say, the first things I go for, the swords, which is quite scary, bearing in mind, I don't have insurance, I'm minimal at first aid, and some of them are related, so you invariably get them, you know, brothers and sisters looking at each other going, yep, this is how it ends, and they're always, and the questions you get are that, you always get that, is this real, I get punched, and then they go, ow, and it's, you've seen that. No, I know we live in a plastic age. And then they get, but then you get some weird ones. One kid say, I've got a sword at home bigger than that. And then one of them come up to me and ask me if I was from Game of Thrones. At which point I was thinking, well, actually, that's a really interesting observation. Where's my angle on that? And then I realized you're 7 and you're watching Game of Thrones.
yes, there's that problem.
But they are, that age group, or in fact any age group, because you do find that the parents will invariably want to get involved as well, and they become kids. It's that little spark, and they do remember. I once was up there, and there was one of the kids had visibility issues. He really couldn't see at all. And so his understanding of the Roman armor was the sounds it made and how it felt. And it was all about how you moved the armor and the different sounds and everything. And he then, through some weird, I managed to get hold of, it was on YouTube, and it was a sound of the Gaulish war horn, the Carinx or something like that.
Yeah, the Carnix.
And I managed to find some of those where people have played them, and he went back the next year and he's addicted to it. So he can end up, he's probably, for his age, he's the leading authority in Europe on Gaulish war noises. that's where it's good fun. It really is.
Now you were complaining about your shoes, but I remember doing a little bit of an article about the importance of shoes in the ancient historical era, and how the Romans were sort of unique in the sense that a lot of civilizations had sandals, and when we think about the Greek hoplites, they may have been armored on their chests and heads and had big shields, but they actually fought barefoot. And one of the advantages the Roman legionaries had with those studded, metal-studded boots, is they could stamp on the other guy's toe, and that's going to hurt. And as they're sort of wincing with pain, you can then stab them with a sword. And as I understand it, when a slave was given their freedom, as a symbol of this, they were given a pair of shoes. You didn't know that one?
No, I didn't know that one.
Okay, well, double check it. I'm confident on that one. I'm confident. But it is interesting how, just, you know, everyone knows the armor, but there are whole other elements to, I mean, obviously the Roman army itself fitted into the society. It was very much a military society and militaristic society. But, you know, so in a way, you are a cross-section of the empire, just standing there in your outfit.
Yeah, well, I've done vlogs on every piece of kit, apart from the shoes that I don't have. And there is practically, I'm trying to think, really, most of the armor is borrowed ideas. You think of chainmail, well, chainmail is generally accepted that the Celts made that, the southeast European Celts. The helmet was Gallic. The sword was borrowed from
Spain, wasn't it?
Yeah, well, it was Hannibal's army. And even the little dagger, the Puglio, that was, again, Spanish. So you've got, and the shield, I mean, the scutum was, you know, it belonged to the Hoplite tradition. Everything they came along, they just used to get a good idea and then kind of rebuild it. But they had the industry to be able to do that on a massive scale. No one else really had that. If you can give something like chainmail, for example, if you can give that to everyone, and normally you go into other fighting cultures, and that's something, you know, like a sword is a big thing. It's, you wouldn't normally have that, and yet everyone in the Roman army could be equipped with that. That's just a complete difference. So it's, yeah, you're right. It is, I do find that it's the small things. Shoes, I didn't know they. You can imagine that. Hey, you're free. I want to have a pair of shoes. Oh, thanks.
The in a very brief plug, in my Romans in 100 facts, I sometimes compare the Romans to America today, and you've just given an example of that, in the sense that, you know, there's very little that America itself has actually invented. But what they do is they have the industry and resource to actually take it to another level. You know, let's take, you know, rockets being a great example. The Germans were dropping them on London during World War II, and some of those rocket scientists were involved in the Apollo space program. But the Americans had the resource and grunt to get man to the moon with someone else's technology. Just like you said, all the different parts of the armor and equipment is actually taken from tribes that they quite frankly found it hard to fight. You know, if it's good, you know, if you can't beat them, join them, in a sense, was their motto.
Absolutely, yeah. They were very quick learners. It was just all, but that was the whole thing. And the Rome also then had the PR to be able to sell it back to you that this was inherently Roman. So the piece of kit that you nicked a century ago was Roman.
Well, the Romans, the Romans may have been very quick learners, but I'm just going to interrupt you for a second, because me and Jem are not very quick learners, which is why every time we have a special guest on the podcast, we get to this point where we're half an hour into the episode, and I suddenly remember the episode's only supposed to be about 25 minutes long. So I'll let you finish up your final point, any little final point you want to make, but I will just say, Jem, we need to get this sorted out. What we need to do is, when we have people on, we need to just think about recording a double episode at the same time, because I'm going to say to Neil exactly what I say to every single guest we've had on. We've got to have you on again, because we've barely scratched the surface of what we're talking about at this point in time.
Well, I'd love to come back on. Absolutely. Absolutely. I'm trying to think what's best for me to plug. I suppose I've got a new website.
So where can they find you? If you've liked what Neil's got to say, Neil, yeah. Where can they find you?
Well, I've got a website which I've just set up. It's www.ancientblogger.com. It's all nice and easy. And you can find me on Twitter at ancientblogger. It's all standardized, you see. I've got my old Tumblr, which is He Has a Wife, You Know, which, again, I was going to say.
I remember that. Yes.
You see, now, you said about naming conventions. You said about your naming. I did this on the basis that it's one of the funniest lines in Life of Brian. It starts. It's in that, and it's just before the setup, because the original jokes just hit you, and this is he has a wife, you know. And I thought that would be brilliant. But I had an email from early on. I had a message. And I thought, it was my first ever message. I'm so excited. It's going to be nice. And it was. And it's a woman going, I'm so happy for you. You are not like most men on the internet who are all scum. You're happy to show that you're committed and you aren't afraid to show your feelings. And all this stuff. And it's like, oh, no, you haven't got this, have you? So I then had to, do I tell her it's from a film? Or do? And then I just said, thanks very much. You know, these things are important to me. And it was, yeah. Yeah, didn't really think about that. So I'm quite happy. I've got a new website with my proper name on it, and I've got my Twitter. I've got my YouTube videos on there as well, where you can see me either being exceptionally wooden or the other end of the scale, one of those people in one of those Geordie Shores or something, when, you know, when they get someone there explaining, they explain, oh, I didn't realise you'd just come in the house. And they sort of stand in front of a backdrop and you move their arms a lot. I'm strung between one of those two at any one point. But I go across various things. I also try and do battle reenactments with small pieces of Lego and stuff. I don't know where to go next. So if anyone ever has any thoughts, they keep asking me to buy more kit. I don't have the money to do it. And now I'm doing podcasts. So there we go. I'm doing a kind of a range of things, all again falling down those stairs I mentioned earlier, very slowly but happily, and with no pain.
Excellent. Well, look, Neil, thank you very much for your time. To our listeners, I hope you've enjoyed this. Please do hunt down Ancient Blogger, be it on, you know, the World Wide Web or on Twitter. It's highly enjoyable. I also particularly liked your Christmas thing where you wrap Christmas lights around your legionary armor. Yeah. I thought that was a wonderful clash of civilizations there.
Then I realized I was going to wear it out, but I just thought I'm going to get some weird death via electrocution, even though it's a battery, and that would just top it all off. So I
probably you don't want to be an internet meme, do you? No, that would be a bad thing.
I don't want to be that guy.
And Greg, what have you did you want to sort of talk us out of this then?
Yeah, I'll talk us out of this. What I will say is, obviously, you know, being our purely cynical selves, one of the reasons that me and Jim have guests on the podcast is because we like to cross over our audiences. So as well as, you know, all of our audience, we want to say go and check out Ancient Blogger everywhere, you've just been told. I'm assuming there's going to be a few people that are listening to this because they've tuned in for Ancient Blogger. This might be your first episode. Whether it's your first episode or not, you can do the podcast a massive, massive help by just going to the iTunes or wherever you've downloaded this episode from, and please just give us a 5-star rating if you've enjoyed it, and just leave a little review. Every single review we get gets us more chance of being seen, gets us more chances of being listened to by more people, builds our audience, and gets us to have more wonderful special guests like Neil today. And just lets us really improve what we're doing as well. So thank you to everyone who's listening for the first time. And, of course, thank you to our older listeners. Thank you, of course, to my wonderful co-host, Mr. Jem Deducci.
Thank you very much to I've got to say, you just called all our listeners old. Maybe our young and vibrant listeners too. And also Greg Chapman. And thank you again, Neil.
Yeah, and obviously a massive thank you, Neil. Thank you so much. We are definitely going to have you on again. It's been a blast. And, trouble is we've opened up so many avenues of conversation, and we're now going to leave them hanging in the air until we get another chance to have you on. So thank you so much.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure.
And thank you all for listening. And goodbye. And take care.